and welcome to another On the Hoof podcast for Vets in Practice. I'm your host, Alison Braddock, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Veterinary Investigation Officer from Dumfries, Gemma Reid. Hello, Gemma. Welcome.
Hello, Alison. How are you?
I'm very well. I know you've come from a busy farm animal practice to become one of our veterinary investigation officers. Tell us a little bit about what you've done in the past.
Okay, so a little bit about myself. So I started working here in Dumfries in April, having left a large independent part of the Excel Vets Group practice in North Cumbria. I had been there for 17 years. A large amount of my focus, and probably in the last 15 years, was spent on dairy farms. Over that time, I had like specific areas of interest, particularly in dairy calves and young stock, and was involved with the running of calf clubs and young stock discussion groups. Also, another part of interest in what I did was dairy herd health, fertility, and also involved with infectious disease projects on BVD yonies, and also enjoyed getting involved with farmer training areas, particularly on dairy cows, really. That's me.
That's great, Gemma. I'm really going to look forward to having you on our podcast series. And I think it's great that you've got all that practical experience to benefit our listeners as well. So what are we going to be talking about today, Gemma?
So today we are going to be talking about long bone deformity in calves, which is otherwise known by its proper name as congenital joint laxity and dwarfism. And it's something that we saw this spring, predominantly in springborn suckler calves. So we thought it was worthwhile engaging with people a bit more about.
Yeah, thanks, Gemma. That's really interesting. So how does it actually present in the herd?
So the problem with long bone deformity is you don't know it's happened until the calf's born, when it's actually too late to do anything about it for those actual calves. So usually what farmers will see at calving time is either stillborn calves, which look deformed, and the main deformity that they see is small calves have abnormal heads potentially and abnormal limbs, but the calves aren't always stillborn, can be born alive. So the dwarves, they have domed heads, they have lax joints, and also have short legs. And that's specifically to do with shortening of the long bones, which are the humerus and the femur. And sometimes they can have a shortened jaw as well. So these calves, if they're not born dead, then some of them are born and they can't stand because obviously the joints and the limbs aren't formed properly. And then others can stand and get about but are very, very small.
So Gemma, what do we know about what causes this?
So this is where it all gets a bit of a grey area, because there are various hypotheses about what actually causes it. And it probably is something that could do with some more research, but certainly the one thing that it seems specifically linked to is the period of month 4 and 5 of a cow's pregnancy, and that's when actually the joints and the bones are developing. And what we think is something happens at that stage. There are various hypotheses, but one that seems to come up again and again is potentially one of the causal factors being a deficiency of manganese. And how that happens is not clear cut either. There's been various studies on how it happens, and what they think is potentially that cows that are fed silage during that critical time, there's something in that silage that actually causes the manganese to become less available, and manganese is needed for the bone development. So if the manganese becomes unavailable, then it can cause these deformities at that time. There was a Canadian study that was done which links it most to the difference in feeding. And it was a particular Canadian study that looked at cows that were fed silage, grass silage, were fed hay, and were fed red clover silage. And that study found cows that were fed hay only grass silage from the same grazing, the ones that were fed hay didn't have any cases of long bone deformity, and the ones that were fed the grass silage did. And they had even more calves that were fed when they were fed red clover silage. Why that is, the more had deformity with red clover silage isn't clear either, but what they wonder with silage is whether there is something within the silage that stops that uptake of manganese. It all sounds a bit complicated, doesn't it? But yeah, it's something to do with silage feeding during that critical period. In other countries, what they found in Australia, again, in Australia, it's slightly different because their feeding system, but they've also found it occurred with animals that were going through severe drought at that time and a lack of accessibility to grazing. But it's very much nutritional. And what the link seems to be in this country is through silage feeding. And what's also been discussed is whether there's something within the silage process, so whether there's something produced when the silage is fermenting that stops the availability of manganese, or whether there's a fungal toxin produced, or whether silage effluent removes a substance so manganese becomes less available. It's a great topic, this, isn't it? Because it's very complicated.
Yes, it's fascinating, isn't it? And there's still so much more research to do in this area.
And the thing is that it doesn't affect the same farms every year. So one farm can have a problem one year, it doesn't have the problem the following year. But we did have a farm this year, they had 10% of their calves born with long bone deformity. So that's a significant loss, wow. Isn't it, really? Yeah. But it definitely does seem to be due to feeding over the winter, and it tends to be like springborn suckler calves. So really, you know, calves that are cows that are in calf now, it's really, if you think those at 4 or 5 month stage now, it's what happens now dictates what happens in next April or May, really. And that's why it's often an after the horse has bolted scenario about what you actually do about it.
Yes, absolutely, Gemma. And this is why you were keen on doing this podcast on this particular topic now, wasn't it? Because it's very timely.
Yeah, well, really, yeah, hopefully it's not too late. Well, it will be too late for some people, but I think it's just to make people aware that there are things that they could potentially do feeding-wise to just preemptively help prevent it from happening next spring.
That's great, Gemma, thank you. So a farm vet, obviously going out to a farm, how does that vet help the farmer to reduce the risk in their herd?
Well, I think the main thing is to talk to people about how they're going to feed the suckler cows over the winter. And what they found is if people are feeding 100% silage, grass silage, then that's a much bigger risk factor. So one of the suggested feeding methods of feeding is adding 25% straw to that ration, and that helps reduce the risk and kind of dilutes the effect of the grass silage. And the other thing is just making sure that they're supplementing with the correct mineral, and certainly making sure that it's one that's got manganese in it, and making sure that it's got manganese at the level that's needed. So the inclusion rate for manganese is, so it's 1,000 milligrams of manganese a day is needed. And that roughly works out as an inclusion rate of 7,000 milligrams per kilogram in any mineral supplement. The other thing that potentially a vet could do, but again, with any of these things, it's got its pitfalls, is you could potentially blood sample cows after they've been on the winter ration for a couple of weeks to see what manganese levels are like. If they were low, then obviously that would tell you that obviously supplementation was needed. But if they weren't low, then it doesn't necessarily give you a true indicator because you don't know how available that manganese potentially could be. And that's a complicating factor with it, really, is that when people have analysed rations, so analysed silage, the manganese that's on paper as in the silage is okay, but actually it's been deficient when it's actually got into the cow. And because of these factors that they think within silage is affecting its availability. So you could test a silage sample and it'd be okay, but then actually it's not been okay when in terms of when the cow's absorbed it. So yeah, it's not straightforward, but certainly if you did blood sample and they were low, then that would help pinpoint what you could do. Another thing that potentially could be discussed, but again, this is anecdotal and there isn't necessarily any clear-cut evidence that I know of, but there is a possibility of a targeted supplementation by injection of cows with a supplement that includes manganese at that critical time, which could help boost levels as well. But it's really looking at that suckler cow ration and seeing whether it's got enough straw in it. The other thing that's been mentioned about silage is sort of really good quality first cut pit silage is more likely to be a factor than say feeding big bale silage or something like that. So trying to avoid maybe higher quality silages, which doesn't necessarily make sense, does it, when you think, but certainly wetter, higher quality, fast growing grass silages have been thought to be a risk factor as well.
Gosh, that's fascinating. So, I mean, I'm in Somerset and you're obviously in Scotland.
Yeah.
I mean, are there parts of the country that are more potentially more at risk? Is there a pattern to this or do we not know yet?
Well, it's been mentioned all over the world for different reasons. It sounds like, as I mentioned about Australia and America and places like that, it sounds like it's been associated with drought conditions, whereas in this country it seems to be associated with winter feeding and silage. Certainly we do see it in Scotland. I'm not sure how much it's reported in the south of England, but it certainly does call it's a sporadic thing, and there's no reason why it should be just confined to one geographical area.
Well, that's interesting. So have you got any key takeaway messages for vets going out on farm?
I think if people see it or hear about it or see dwarf calves, then it would be, I don't know if it's a take-home message, but it would be really good to know about them, because I think sometimes people, especially if there's not a lot of them, they might just think, oh, it's just one of those things, or, you know, not necessarily feel that it's relevant. But yeah, I think it would be good to know how much of it's out there, because often with these things, it's maybe underreported. And I think the take home is just, it's an opportunity to kind of be involved in what your suckler cow clients are feeding the cows over the winter, and some simple steps can just help prevent what can be quite a large problem for some people, really. So yeah, I think the take home is feeding the correct mineral and trying to avoid feeding 100% grass silage ration when the cows are at that key stage of pregnancy.
So Gemma, I know there's not an awful lot that is known about it, is there? I mean, considering it was first found in Nevada in 1932, but I know that you were talking about a Canadian study. So can you just tell us a little bit about what the Canadians found?
So there was a Canadian study undertaken it's quite a long time ago now, in 1990. But that was looking at a Canadian beef herd, because Canadian beef farmers were reporting problems with cows that were fed on a silage-based diet. And basically the Canadian vets called it congenital joint laxity and dwarfism. And basically that description was very similar to what we see in Scotland. So Canadian researchers did a series of investigations and found a connection between the incidence of long bone deformity in feeding diets during the winter, which comprise only grass and clover silage. So then, to drill it down a bit more, what they did was they looked at feeding the same grass so the same grass source, but in hay form and in grass silage form. And what they found was that they could pinpoint that cows that were fed hay only didn't have any calves that were born with long bone deformity, whereas the cows that were fed the grass silage had 28% of calves that had long bone deformity. But the interesting thing that they found was that the manganese content of the silage wasn't any lower than that of the hay. So that's what then has brought it back to thinking that something must happen in the silage process and silage storage that then makes the manganese potentially unavailable. So that's where they came back to, could it be either that if silage effluence removes a substance that is necessary to prevent it, could it be that obviously that there's a risk of molds within silage? Could there be some sort of toxin that is causing it? Or is that the silage fermentation process is producing some kind of substance that makes the manganese unavailable? And the incidence, which again was quite interesting, was that they had 38% of calves born with long bone deformity when the dams were fed red clover silage only, even though the manganese content was similar to that in grass.
Gosh.
So then from that, they alluded to that it seems that the nutrient isn't lost with effluent, but possibly that the manganese and the silage is less available. Potentially that's something that binds it, but that's the thing that we don't actually know what that thing is. And other studies have looked at, you know, with any of these deformities, could it be an infectious cause? Could it be a different toxic cause? Could it be genetic? And certainly bone deformities can be genetic, and there are some forms of dwarfism that are hereditary, but this particular form of long bone deformity seems to be specific to that 4 to 5 months of gestation and has got a nutritional aspect to it. And there was also another, so that study is most relevant to this country. There has been another study in Australia, and it's quite different again in terms of it's a nutritional aspect, but it doesn't seem linked to silage. But a study in southeastern Australia looked at over 1,000 calves that had been affected. And what they found with all these calves was that their mothers had dealt with an episode of severe drought in that period when there were 4 to 5 months of gestation. So then it comes back again to nutrition at that key stage of pregnancy. But obviously and more work hasn't been done there, but it seemed to look at drought and feed shortage that was the factor in Australia.
Gosh. So it's not straightforward. There's a multitude of
No, it isn't, yeah.
It's isn't it?
The other thing is that it doesn't necessarily, you can have a farm where it might affect one group, but it might not affect another group. So it's quite unusual how it manifests itself. But when it does, it's very drastic for the farms involved.
Yeah, because it's so visible, isn't it? And it's not very good in terms of the health and welfare.
No, and it's really like the farms that have a big instance. You know, if you have 10% of your calves born, then it's really soul destroying to see that, because you're dealing with calves that are either born dead. We had ones come in that were stillborn, or you have ones that are born but can't stand, so they can't suckle and they can't, you know, they just need put down. Or you have ones that can get about, but they can't get about well, so then, you know, they need put down, or they're kind of nursed along to see if they're going to improve enough to have a quality of life, you know. And some do, like some are just small, but they don't grow, you know, they're not productive, they're never going to be in terms of sale weight or you know, the animal that it would have been if they hadn't had this. So it's a big impact when it occurs.
Gosh. So in terms of if anyone wants to do any extra reading on the subject, are there any places that people can get a source of extra information, Gemma?
There's a couple of papers that are quite good to look at. There's the one that I've talked about in terms of the Canadian study. There's also in 2012, there's an overview in the Veterinary Journal, and that's a review of congenital chondrodystrophy of unknown origin in beef herds. And that basically has a review of all the studies and all the scenarios, and it goes back to 1932 when they first found it in Nevada, and it does break it down into the common presentation and what hasn't been found in terms of studies and testing. But I think in this country, the only thing that it looks like that we can potentially do something about is trying to make sure that manganese supplementation is where it should be until it's known if there are any other specific factors that cause it, really. But certainly when this scenario happens, it isn't specific to a particular breed. It does come back to... It isn't... I mean, but you can get bone deformities that are breed-specific, but certainly this one isn't... this isn't related to a specific breed. But the testing aspect is difficult and frustrating, because when calves are born with this deformity, it's too late then to say, oh yes, it definitely was manganese, because it's happened, you know, 4 months or 5 months previously. So blood samples at that stage don't necessarily give you the answers you want, because it's happened so historically. So when we've, so that's why studies that have looked at blood samples and looked at tissue samples, it's hard to be definitive, because the testing's often so far past the point of when the problem has occurred. Because again, you don't know the problem's happening until the calves are born.
Yes, absolutely. So you're saying that, you know, what vets and their client farmers have to focus on is the manganese. I mean, it's been a really interesting podcast. Just leave us with just a couple of key points, Gemma, to leave the podcast with. What you just to sum up what you've been saying, really.
So long bone deformity, can otherwise be known as congenital joint laxity and dwarfism, it most commonly involves springborn suckler calves when their mothers have been fed on a high percentage of grass silage ration, seems to be the most common theme. And in order to prevent it, it's just making sure that suckler cow diet is correct over the winter, particularly around the 4 to 5 month stage of gestation. And with that in mind, looking at a ration that's 75% grass silage and 25% straw, and supplementing with minerals, specifically with the correct inclusion rate of manganese, will hopefully help mitigate the risk of this occurring.
That's great, Gemma, and it's always good to be able to have a plan, isn't it, and have some top tips. So thank you. That's been really interesting, and it's good to learn a little bit about this long bone deformity. You know, there's still lots to learn, and we may ask you back for a recap for the following year and see how we've got on.
Yeah, well, hopefully we won't get many in the spring.
Yes, hopefully not, and we'll try and get the message out to as many people as we possibly can through this podcast. And we hope our listeners have found this useful. Don't forget to follow us and sign up to our podcasts. They are on various platforms, as well as our On the Hoof section on our website. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Gemma.
Thank you.